My friends, it's Monday, July 6, 2026, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belleville, your patriotic progressive red state refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in Southern Oregon. On this week's Smoke Session, let's talk about how the Democratic Socialists of America are, quote, destroying the Democratic Party, end quote. I'll explain how the next administration needs to make accountability job one. And we've got an Idaho update on abortion rights, medical marijuana rights, and trans rights. But before we get to all the serious political stuff, we've got time for three quick hits.
I want red. There's no substitute for red.
Okay, on the 4th of July weekend, I took the time to check out the fireworks display that was going on from Freedom 250, the White House's MAGA-approved celebration of the 250th birthday of the United States of America. And did you see this fireworks show? Oh my God. So first of all, it didn't even go off until after midnight because they had some weather delays and such. So it was really a July 5th. He can't even get the 4th of July right. So he went off on July 5th Eastern time. But in addition to that, just watching the fireworks, it was a terrible fireworks show. Oh my, it was just all red. This was like Sammy Hagar put together a fireworks show. Everything was just red, red, red. There was a little bit of white every now and then, but just red. I put a screenshot up on my Blue Sky account, if you see it, and I put it side by side with that King Charles portrait where it was all blood red King Charles, and I posted with who wore it better, because it was just the worst fireworks show in the world. Oh my God. Looked like we were under attack, although maybe it was kind of apropos. I don't know. And of course, they had the performance going on by the military band, and I saw different service members, Army, Navy, Air Force, so I think it was a collective military band, and a lot of people pointed out they were there because they had to be there. They were ordered to be there. They couldn't not be there, so yeah, there's that, and I wish there was a better way for people to get to know about the Army band. I served in the 25th Army Band for 6 years. There's a lot of great musicians there, but boy, this performance, I gotta say, first of all, it's kind of square. The band was kind of square, and that, you know, that can be the orchestration, that can be the players, but I ran a squad back when I was in the military band, little rock band we called Jamouflage, and yeah, one of the best band names I've ever had, and then we were never that square, I assure you, but they opened up with a Chicago song, and it wasn't Saturday in the Park. Like Saturday in the Park, think it was the 4th of July. Like, it was literally Saturday. You were literally in the park, and it was literally the 4th of July. Well, I guess it was the 5th by then. How do you not put that in the rotation? So, and they played, you know, Don't Stop Believing, a bunch of other pop songs. Some Bon Jovi was in there, I think. And, you know, they did a yeoman-like job there, to pardon the military pun. But at the end there, they played that goddamn Toby Keith song, right? As I call him, Kobe Teeth. That redneck anthem of we'll put a boot in your ass if you mess with the USA. The thing he wrote after 9/11 to get everybody riled up to go attack a country that had nothing to do with it. I was shocked. A military band in uniform presenting a song that presents the United States military as a boot in your ass. How far we have fallen from the days of Dwight Eisenhower, haven't we? Oh, and one other thing about this fireworks display and this whole Freedom 250. You know, the Freedom 250 is the MAGA Trump thing. But there already was before that, and for years leading up to the 250th anniversary, it's been planned. There was the congressionally approved America 250. America 250, Freedom 250. And we just found out this week the Democrats have put some feelers out, asking some questions about what seems to have happened is that when donors were contacting the White House to be able to donate to the America 250, the official United States celebration, the Trump administration, Trump regime there, was giving them the account numbers and the routing numbers to Freedom 250. Now, I don't know where you come from, but back in my day, we called that wire fraud. In the Trump universe, they call it government.
You can do what you want to us, but we're not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth the United States of America. Gentlemen!
You're not walking out on this one, mister.
It's once again time to take a look around the globe at the advancements in science and technology in our segment we call Meanwhile in the USA.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Africa's second largest economy secures a $560 million solar mega project as clean energy investments surge. Egypt has awarded a $560 million contract for the 1 gigawatt West Minya solar power project with a 600 megawatt hour battery storage system. Meanwhile, in the USA, we are paying foreign companies money to not build the offshore wind projects they'd already agreed to build.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
About 5,000 solar panels were added to the Lake Mutzi Dam to form the largest alpine solar plant in Switzerland at about 2,500 meters above sea level. The plant has been fully operational since the end of August 2022. The Alpen Solar Project produces around 3 million kilowatt hours of electricity per year. Meanwhile, in the USA, we're reversing plans to make an Arizona coal power plant to switch to renewable energy and doubling down on it using coal.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Spain is exploring innovative systems that combine floating solar panels with seawater desalination. By generating renewable electricity and producing fresh water from the same installation, these projects aim to address both clean energy generation and water scarcity. Meanwhile, here in the USA, we let data centers use millions of gallons of fresh water for free without even knowing how much they're using.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Chinese tech makes desalinating seawater cheaper than producing bottled water. Solar-powered innovation has shown year-long stability with near-zero utility energy costs thanks to a new type of photothermal material. Meanwhile, in the USA, you can get a 12-pack of non-alcoholic-flavored hard seltzer water for $25.
That's a fucking red card, that ref.
Somebody got a red card.
You found me! Red card!
Don't make me red card, you bird.
That's a red card!
That's a red card! Red card!
Well, later today, the U.S. men's national team, or as I like to call them, the U.S. Mutant Ninja Turtles, are taking on the team from Belgium in the knockout rounds of the World Cup being played in Seattle. So good luck, U.S. Weird things happen when you play Monday Night Football in Seattle. Take it from a Packers fan. But I've been totally transfixed by soccer this year in the World Cup. And, you know, I try this every, I don't know, couple dozen years. I try to get into soccer. Last time the World Cup came to the United States, the early 2000s or something? Anyway, whenever it was, I tried to get into it. So I watched the World Cup final. And it was one of those finals that went to 0-0 in regular time. And then it was 0-0 in extra time. And so they settled it with 5 penalty kicks. And that completely turned me off. Like, what's the point of running around for 2 hours and then just settle with 5 penalty kicks? But this year's World Cup that I've been following has been a lot more fun to watch. You had the Cinderella story with Cabo Verde punching way above its weight for a country that's just, you know, 500,000 people. We got larger towns than Oregon, for God's sake. And, you know, playing against great teams like Argentina and the others they tied up. But there's been some shenanigans going on because we've got the world's most corrupt sport, FIFA, being played in the world's most corrupt country, or at least the world's most corrupt democracy, the United States of America, and the world's most corrupt leader, Donald J. Trump. And what happened in the U.S. game, of course, the star of the U.S. team got a red card. A red card means you're kicked out of the game for the rest of the game, rest of the match, and you're kicked out for the whole next match as well. So it's like, you know, in college football, you have like a targeting penalty where you target a guy, you hit him with your head, you spear him, and they kick you out for the rest of the game or, you know, the next half of the next game. But no, the whole next game, the guy's kicked out. So he wasn't going to be eligible to play against Belgium tonight, except Donald J. Trump, the special boy, went and called the head of FIFA, you know, the guy who gave him a peace prize already, and said it was terribly unfair to suspend him. And so they suspended the suspension, and he gets to play tonight. So this has opened up a can of worms, because in the England match, England and Mexico, one of their guys got a red card. So he's kicked out the rest of that match, and England held on to win. But now, is this guy going to be kicked out for the next game? They're already appealing that. They're saying, well, if you're not going to kick out that guy for the next game, you can't kick our guy out for the next game. Even though the penalties were slightly different, the England guy was a little more egregious, but it's terrible, this level of corruption hitting that sport, because now with this U.S. game, if the U.S. wins, it's a tainted win, especially if the suspended guy ends up scoring, which is highly likely. He's one of the star players. So that's got some problem, but I've been watching the sport and enjoying it a little more, starting to understand the setup of the plays and the offense and the defense. And I gotta say, I still think there's some problems. I still think there's some problems that football could fix. First of all, I think I like soccer more this year because I'm watching it in Spanish. I think football in Espanol is supposed to be the way it's watched on TV. I'm just so excited when that guy goes goal. I can't resist it. It's wonderful. So, but they should fix some things. First of all, this whole red card thing, when they go 10-on-11, they kick a guy off for the whole rest of the game. Why not do that with the extra time, right? Like if you go the whole two halves and you end up tied, take a guy off each side every minute or so. Get to the point where, you know, if you're 10 minutes into this extra time, it's goalie versus goalie, one-on-one. Why not? Like there's something to get that going, because I don't understand this whole extra time thing. What the hell is going on with this? They run around for 90 minutes. They got a clock up there. It says 90 minutes on it. And they're running around. And the 90 minutes is done. But they're still running around. And then all suddenly this little clock comes up. Little number comes below the 90 minutes. It says plus 10. Okay, I guess they're going to play another 10 minutes for some reason. So they run around. And this is why I was watching the Cabo Verde game against Argentina, right? It was 2-2. And they go this extra time. And the guy kicks a goal and it's 3-2. And I go, oh, dang it, they lost. No, they kept playing. They're in extra time. The guy kicked the goal and then they kept playing some more. Like, what? This isn't sudden death. Why is this not sudden death? You're in extra time in a championship. Why would you play 90 minutes, then have someone score and then think, well, let's let it try to be a tie again. What is going on with this sport? And then, even then, when you got the extra time going on, you know, 8 minutes going up, 9 minutes is going up, 10 minutes is going up, and the 10 minutes hits, and they're still running around. It's in the 10-20s and the 10-30s. Why are they still running around? Finally, somewhere around minute 11, somebody kicked it out of bounds, and then they said, okay, now the game's over. What is going on with extra time in soccer? What, your 10s go to 11? What, a Spinal Tap the referees here? I don't understand what's going on with this. Make your overtime sudden death. Remove a player every minute. And then maybe you won't have to settle your championships by guys shooting 5 free throws each at the end of the game.
We're all socialists here.
And a lot of rich people are socialists now, which is, never trust a socialist with a summer house.
If you give in, you'll lose money and you open the floodgates to socialists and radicals.
I'm not a lover of communists, socialists, or intellectual bleeding hearts.
I'm going to deal with the rise of the patrioteering societies and the capitulation of leading socialists.
Socialists trying to stir things up against our monarchy.
But we're continuing to see the fallout from the few wins, the 4, 5, 6 wins, I guess it was, by members of the Democratic Socialists of America in some deep blue districts in New York, right? Radlander and a couple of the other candidates endorsed by Zoran Mamdani. We had a winner out in Colorado who unseated a 9-term incumbent in Diana DeGette. There's a few others out there whose names escape me at the moment, but that's the big freak out right now in politics among the Democratic chattering classes, is that the Democratic Socialists of America are destroying the Democratic Party.
Oh, no.
They're destroying it. I gave you that quote from Letitia James last week. You don't blow up the party by, you know, running candidates in primaries who have differing ideas that the voters then choose by a majority. You can't do that. We can't actually listen to our base. We can't listen to our voters and give them what they want. What will the donors think? And Democrats hate their base. I'm telling you, they just hate us. They hate the idea of politics. Chris Sosa out there on Blue Sky had a great post. DSA is destroying the Democratic Party. Y'all realize you lost to literal Donald Trump after he did an insurrection, right? We should be thanking these folks for dragging the party out of a reputational gutter and bringing in disillusioned young people who sat out 2024. Yes, yes, slow clap on that one. Absolutely right. The Democratic Party, you have a Donald Trump in office, a literal global mob boss who committed an insurrection, blah, blah, blah. I could give you the whole rap sheet. And yet Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries rate lower in polls. The Democratic Party struggles. I mean, for years, how long did the Republican Party turn Hunter Biden into the symbol of the Biden crime family and massive corruption? But now we got Donald Trump serving up, you know, a corruption buffet every day. And they can't make that the main story. They can't bring people's attention to it. Well, Air America lost back in 2026, so there's really nothing we can do, right? And so now, all the MAGA out there, you heard it in the past week. You heard it in Trump's rambling, meandering speech on July 5th under the blood-red fireworks, where he's talking about, it's the communists. America will never succumb to communism. Right? They can't say socialism, because socialism's actually starting to get a decent brand awareness. People heard of this Democratic Socialist named Zoran Mamdani in New York City who paid people $30 an hour to get snow off the street. And what do you know? The streets were clear. Who went and got the potholes filled that every administration, Democrat, Republican, since had failed to do. Who's getting rent freezes for the people? Who's establishing city-run grocery stores and food deserts? You know, politicians who listen to their base and use government to do things that help them. What an astonishing concept that somehow is blowing up the Democratic Party. So it's patriots versus communists now. That's their line. We got to fight the communists. We got to use the word communist because that's still a scary word to people over 50. There's people that still remember Soviet Union and communism in the Eastern Bloc, and somehow communism was a bad, terrible thing that we had to go to Korea to fight for and Vietnam to fight for and, I mean, against or fight, stop, whatever you want to call it. But it's not that scary anymore. We won the Cold War. So trying to call it communism, and of course, you know, the establishment Democrats, they're going to help. They're going to help them carry that water by saying, oh, no, no, no. We're not socialists. Oh, no, no. We love capitalism. We're definitely capitalism. Instead of doing what they should be doing and defending the socialism we already have as a good thing, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the various ways that we help the least among us, SNAP, TANF, WIC, these kind of programs that people by and large like, unemployment insurance. Defending the idea that there needs to be some socialism and explaining why we need more of it. Medicare for all. universal income, parental leave, free college, work training, etc. Taking those tax dollars and making them work for us. Explaining how capitalism that lacks socialism is fascism. That's what they're doing. The people in charge right now want to remove all the socialism from our capitalism. They want to get rid. They want to privatize Medicare. They want to private all private health care. They want to privatize Social Security. Capitalism that lacks socialism is fascism. On the other side, socialism that lacks capitalism is communism. That's ownership of the means of production by the state. We don't want that. And good luck trying to get a MAGA to explain to you the difference between democratic socialism and communism. Good luck trying to get that one out of them. And as far as communists, if anyone's a communist here, it's Donald Trump and the MAGA movement. I mean, he's taken state control of the means of production. He's a 10% stake in Intel, trying to get a stake in other companies, taking, you know, money directly from the mass media, controlling the mass media, owning the mass media. Claiming he wants to be a dictator, trying to establish one-party rule, restricting religious observations, pillaring minorities, eliminating the undesirables. For hell's sake, they wear a red hat. They're the Reds. If anyone's a communist, it's Donald Trump. The other thing we've seen with respect to this fear of the democratic socialists, we've got another one running in Michigan. His name's Abdul Al-Sayed, progressive challenger up there in Michigan. And so there'd been two other challengers running, one of them, State Senator Mallory McMorrow, who this week dropped out in a move reminiscent of all of Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren and all those guys dropping out in 2024, just as soon as Bernie was starting to make some moves. Just as soon as Bernie was winning the first two primaries, and oh my God, our voters might choose a socialist. We best all back out and get behind one centrist. And that's what's happening in Michigan. And I think it's going to backfire on them because people want the socialism. Talked about this in the last rant, Broom the Soup. People that have been exposed to capitalism now since the 1980s have seen a system that benefits the rich, that insulates them in their criminality, that bails them out when they fail. Meanwhile, our productivity has gone up. Us laborers have been producing more, but our wages have remained stagnant. Our benefits are being chipped away at. We've seen the economy been plundered two or three times in my lifetime by capitalism. Dot-com bubble, housing bubble, what's soon to be the AI bubble. These guys loot the system, loot the treasury, game the stock market, and leave us holding the bag. And that's why Democrats failed in 2020 with Biden to Trump-proof the presidency, because they just thought he'd fade away. He'd fade away just like we do when we lose, because they don't have any love of their base. Donald Trump, you can say a lot of stuff about him, and God knows I do. He understood that if you had 100% buy-in from your base, you had power. Democrats are too afraid to do that because they feel that if they do that, if they go toward their base, they'll displease those with the money. They'll displease those with the power. They'll displease those with the access. Still trapped in that 1980s mindset of we got our ass kicked by Reagan and Bush three times in a row. America must be a red country. America must be center right. We must fight against our progressive urges and our left wing. And that's what the Democratic Party exists to do. Democratic Party is capitalism's release valve for socialism. It's release valve for left-wing thinking. Let enough of it, you know, bubble through, like, you know, embracing minorities and such, because they have money too. Capitalism likes black people's money and Hispanic people's money and gay people's money. They're all for all the money. Capitalism does have a little bit of a problem with this whole fascist, you know, let's segregate things, because there's not as much money to be made when you're only selling to white people. So there's that balance that capitalism have. We have the capitalist Democratic Party to maintain that release valve on social pressures. And then the Republican Fascist Party to be full speed ahead in making as much money as we can and continued unlimited growth in a finite system. You know, something in biology that we call cancer.
Country where no man is above the law.
He never planned on being held to account.
We won't let them get away with it.
His punishment must be more fulsome, more lingering.
I was thinking that I wanted to see him pay for his crimes.
There's only one way he'll ever pay for his crime.
For in the final analysis, on the day of reckoning, we shall all be held to account.
So speaking earlier about Trump proofing the presidency, something that the Biden interregnum failed to take seriously, with Merrick Garland slow-walking the prosecutions. And, you know, the general feeling, I think, of the Democratic Party was, whew, we beat Trump. He led the insurrection. America will hate him for that. The courts will take care of all this. Let's move ahead for the people. And I don't mean this in a bad way. I'm sure they had the best of intentions. We don't want to focus a lot on Trump and bring a lot of attention to Trump and revive Trump. So let's go forward with chips and sciences and bipartisan infrastructure. And really, the first 2 years of the Biden administration did a lot when it came to, you know, progressive policy. It did some great things. But you let that infection continue to reside in the body politic. And for the entire 4 years of Biden, didn't it feel like Trump was still kind of president? Like shadow president? Like president of the red states? Like we had a president of the red states and the president of the blue states, who, as a president should, considered himself the president of all states and actually did more for the red states than he did for the blue states when it came to those chips and sciences contracts and all of those bipartisan infrastructure shovel-ready jobs. And of course, all the signs up there, you know, in some place in Ohio or Indiana in the Midwest, some red state where you got new construction going up on a bridge or a freeway, there's the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. Bipartisan, because both Republicans and Democrats care about you. This failure of Democrats to try to trumpet their wins and pat themselves on the back and tell the American people, we care about you, we're trying to help you. And the failure for them to paint the Republicans as the impediment, as the obstacle to that, to always be reaching out, let's get some bipartisan compromise. We promise to work together with our Republican counterparts. We wish to reach across the aisle. Fuck that shit. They don't want to work with us. I was walking through downtown Grants Pass the other day, and there's this little antique curio shop, and there was this big life-sized statue thing of the Martian from Mars Attacks. Do you remember the 90s movie Mars Attacks with Jack Nicholson and the Martians had the brain heads and Democrats don't understand that the MAGA movement are the Martians from Mars Attacks. They're here to take over the planet and kill the rest of us. They're not here to talk and negotiate. And in that movie that they first, you know, show up, it's like, take us to your leader. And, oh, we wish to have peace. And, hey, we come in peace. And then next thing you know, they're shooting us all. Because that's what they are. They seek to dominate. They believe this country was founded as a white Christian homeland where good white Christian straight men could have their subservient wives, take the land they wanted from the natives, get some black people to farm it for them and make a whole lot of money, import some Chinese to build some railroads to get their stuff across the country. They feel like they've been the ones wronged in the deal. They see the compromises that took place to form this country 250 years ago, where we decided, okay, slavery will be all right. You can have slaves, sure. Oh, yeah. And not only can you have slaves, but we'll give you 60% representation greater than your actual voting population, because we're going to give you, we're going to count 60% of your slaves for your apportionment, for how many representatives you get in Congress and how many votes you get for president in the Electoral College. Even though the slaves, of course, don't get to vote. They're just your property. And not only that, South, if you'll join us to form this country, we promise that we won't stop the slave trade for at least 20 more years. There's a 20-year guarantee in the original United States Constitution that said we will not stop the slave trade for another 20 years to get the South to sign on. And they feel like we broke the deal. That first shot in Sumter, Fort Sumter, with this just to start the Civil War, was the South saying, hey, you keep expanding the territory out westward and creating all these free states, and you're dividing the country up, and we were supposed to be a United States, and you already said we could form this country and have slaves. So they feel like they're the ones that's been wronged. And since, and who, somebody said the other day that the South lost the Civil War, but they won the peace. Yeah. The South has risen again. Since 1865, they've been on a project to undo all of the Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, 19th Amendment, women's vote. They want to undo all that and go back to what they thought America was, the white, Christian, straight man's paradise that we've ruined. So when it comes to the next president, who I hope is a Democratic president with a Democratic Congress, they need to understand the writing on the wall. They need to understand the feeling of the people out here who are sick of this. We're sick of all the crazy. We're sick of the donors. We're sick of the rich people getting away with it. We're sick of the impunity, the two levels of the justice system. And so I've been listening to some podcasts, and Rick Wilson out there at Lincoln Project had a series of podcasts he did on America at 250. And on this podcast, he had Jamie Raskin, who I think is a great congressman. His segment was fine. Liz Oyer was on as well. Now, Liz Oyer was a pardon attorney in the administration before Trump and during Trump. And she got fired early on because, you know, she wasn't going to go along with what's currently a pay-to-pardon scheme going on at the White House. You know, throw $1 million, $2 million their way, they'll give you a pardon. So I'm listening to this podcast with her. And as they get to the subject of the next administration and holding this one, these criminals, to account, he said, quote, it'll be a real balancing act for the next attorney general as to how much they want to hold these previous lawbreakers accountable versus how much we want to move forward, end quote. Move forward. Does that sound familiar? From the Obama era, we need to move forward. Have we learned nothing from pardoning Nixon, not prosecuting Bush, and slow walking the prosecutions of Trump? And speaking of the pardon of Nixon, by the way, I actually heard the audio on another one of his podcasts. Rick Wilson played the actual audio of Gerald Ford's announcement of Nixon's pardon. It was a full and unconditional pardon that dated all the way back to 1969 when he took office. So Ford didn't just pardon him for Watergate and the break-in. Ford pardoned Nixon for everything Nixon did in office for the entirety of his, 6 years he was there. So he closed the door on investigating what else Nixon might have been doing in those earlier days. Boy, how has that turned out? Well, we taught Republicans that if you get to the top, you get away with it. The thing that's bubbling under all of this populism on the right, you had the Tea Party and the MAGA movement. On the left, Democratic Socialism, Bernie, John Edwards, Two Americas. All of that populism is a feeling that the system is rigged for the rich. It's rigged for capital, and they always get away with it no matter which party. So if the Democrats want to have any chance of being anything but a one-and-done, one-term breath of relief from Trump before we go to the next fascist who'll be smarter and more efficient, We need to make accountability job one. Everyone under 50, capitalism just means speculative bubbles that enrich the already wealthy, who are then bailed out by us taxpayers. Socialism. Our wages and our wealth have remained stagnant under capitalism. Why would Democrats want to be caping for capitalism? Liz Hoyer goes on to say that we need to focus on what the country needs. Yeah, accountability. People need to see that when powerful people break the law, other powerful people will hold them to account. The number one knock year after year on Democrats is they're weak. The number two knock on Democrats year after year is they don't believe in anything. So for once, believe in something. Believe in something called the rule of law and that no man is above it. And that you'll be strong in prosecuting those who offend that in which you believe. If the Democrats in power do this, we need to look forward bullshit again. The next fascist won't be overcome.
Some of us still believe in protecting a woman's right to choose. These are extremist zealots that will stop at nothing to restrict a woman's right to choose.
Are you trying to take away a woman's right to choose?
Do you believe in a woman's right to choose?
Well, all right, that's the country baseline, and you know what that means. It's time for our Boycott Idaho segment, where I explain to you all of the reasons why you should avoid the handmade state. Now with 81 reasons available for download at radicalrust.com/Idaho. But today, actually, I have some kudos to throw Idaho's way and then another reason to boycott. So the kudos I want to send out are to the volunteers who have turned in the Idahoans United for Women and Families have turned in the signatures for their initiative proposal. They've turned in nearly 110,000 signatures on July 2nd. For their initiative to legalize abortion in the state of Idaho. The proposed initiative would legalize abortion until fetal viability or in cases of emergency. It would also enumerate rights related to reproductive health and privacy in medical decisions, according to this story in the Idaho Capital Sun by Laura Guido. And that's great news because Idaho has some of the worst felony abortion laws. They've tried to have a abortion trafficking law. I don't know if this has been challenged or on hold or not at this point, but the abortion trafficking law was if you take a minor out of state to get an abortion, you've committed a felony and you go to prison for I forget how many years. Also, like Texas, one of those bounty laws where the family can sue you in civil court and get damages for having, you know, helped the young teen girl get an abortion. Now, there have been all sorts of horror stories come out of Idaho, OBGYNs fleeing the state, women bleeding out in parking lots from miscarriages that doctors are afraid to treat because it might be considered a felony abortion if they did so. It's just been a horror show in the state of Idaho. So they put together the 110,000 signatures. They turned them in. They needed, I think, somewhere around 75,000. So that's a good turn in because, you know, you always have invalidated signatures and so forth. And keep in mind, it's not easy. I think Idaho may be one or two on the list of the states that are toughest to pass an initiative. I mean, aside from the 24 that don't have initiative power at all. But of the 26 that do, Idaho and I'd say Utah are probably the toughest. In Idaho, you have to collect 6% of the signatures from your registered voters in the state from the last election. That's statewide threshold you have to clear, but you can't like go to Boise and gather them all. You also must gather 6% of the signatures from at least 18 of the 35 legislative districts. So there's probably about 14 legislative districts in the Boise Nampa Caldwell area and another few that are out in Pocatello and Idaho Falls, Twin Falls, Coeur d'Alene kind of thing. So you got to get around the state. And you know, it's a state that's about 450 miles north to south and about 350 miles east to west. So it's some doing to get them signatures. And you've got like 180 days to do it. And in the past decade, only three initiatives have made the ballot in the state of Idaho that have tried. And none of the ones that I was behind. Three medical marijuana initiatives and a decrim initiative didn't even come close. Three times they've made the ballot and only one has ever passed. This is what's got the legislature frightened is because the one that passed was Medicaid expansion. In fact, I have a titanium left knee, thanks to Idaho's repeal or the pass of the Medicaid expansion initiative. So thank you, voters of Idaho. And it passed all throughout the state, too, like got in the 60s as far as the support for it. Idahoans went, what, free money from the federal government to help people with health care? Yeah, okay, we'll take that. Idaho's Republicans were like, socialism! Oh, socialism! So they're turning it in, and it looks likely that they'll make the ballot. Now, here is where this segment turns from the kudos part to the reason to boycott Idaho part. That, again, is the Idaho freaking legislature. Because with news of this initiative making the ballot, the Idaho Republicans have already vowed that should it pass the next legislative session, they'll just repeal it. Because in Idaho, when you're passing an initiative, it is a statutory initiative. Idahoans, the citizens of Idaho, cannot initiate a constitutional amendment. Only the legislature can do that. Yeah, so they could have gone through all this trouble, gotten all this support, go to the polls, get the majority's support for it, and the legislature can come back and say, nope, all abortion's still illegal. Ha ha. More shenanigans like that. They've got medical marijuana on the ballot this year as well. Medical marijuana is going to make the ballot in the state of Idaho and be voted on in November. But also on the ballot in the state of Idaho, put forth by the legislature, a constitutional amendment that removes from the power of the initiative the ability to change any drug laws. They are so terrified of Idaho passing a medical marijuana law, one that would be, by the way, a really strict medical marijuana law, especially considering all its neighbors being legalized. Nonetheless, they want to pass a constitutional amendment that makes it impossible for not only this medical marijuana to pass, but any medical marijuana ever in the future. That's how badly they hate the weed. Something they hate more than the weed is the trans people. Yeah, I told you earlier in an earlier segment about Idaho's trans law, the trans snitch law that passed, where if a teacher hears from one of their students that they want to be called by a different name or a different pronoun, or they start dressing more feminine or masculine, depending on whether they're a boy or a girl, if they're doing anything to be called by a different name or addressed by different titles or acting in a way that might not comport with masculinity and femininity norms, they must report it. They must call the parent and they must tell them. Even if the kid doesn't go forth and actually do it, like if the kid came to the teacher and said, well, teacher, I was thinking maybe I ought to be called she and her. What do you think? That teacher now has to call the parent and say, I have to report that your boy Timmy is inquiring about being transgender. Trans snitch law. And if the teacher or the social worker or the therapist, yeah, therapist, doesn't report this, $100,000 fine from the attorney general and the possibility of civil suits from the family, from the parents. This is in addition to Idaho already banning any sort of trans health care, no gender affirming care, not just surgeries, but we're talking, you know, puberty blockers, pills, that kind of stuff. Nothing. They hate the trans people. And this week, the United States Supreme Court said, you go, Idaho, you go right ahead and hate those trans people. They came up with a decision in one of their cases, a case that bubbled up through Idaho, that, yep, states are perfectly allowed to ban trans girls from playing sports. Now, no word on the trans boys playing sports. Trans boys are still allowed to play sports. Yeah. It's the trans girls they have a problem with. And they were denied equal protection review for some odd reason, even though we have a law here that only applies to trans girls and not trans boys. And of course, all the typical arguments around, oh, it's just not fair. It's not fair, and all of the locker rooms, and oh my gosh. And Democrats, of course, are afraid to get into this, especially establishment Democrats, because they don't believe anything. They don't believe in anything. Either you believe trans people are who they say they are and deserve to live a life that is full and enriched in every way everyone else's lives are, or you think they're guys who are faking it. Again, because nobody seems to care about the trans men. And part of that, I'll tell you, is because testosterone's a hell of a drug. You don't even know they are trans men. You're walking around trans men every day, and you don't know it. It's a whole lot easier for trans men to pass. But no, you either think trans women are women, and that woman is a social, cultural, intellectual, spiritual framework into which most females are born and some males feel internally, or you think there's poles and holes. That's it. You got a pole, you're a boy. You got a hole, you're a girl. That's it. And people really do believe that, despite biologists telling us that, hey, there's all sorts of different developments of the XY chromosomes, XXY, XYY. There's 47, 48, comma this, comma that. There's androgyny. There's hermaphroditism. There's intersex characteristics. There's differences in the expression of sex hormones, etc. There's all sorts of variation. Nope. Poles and holes. And if you have a pole, then you have to play with the boys. And if you have a hole, you have to play with the girls. And that's just the way it's going to be. Okay, well, let's let the trans boy who's got the testosterone go and play volleyball against the girls, I guess. And I might understand this whole fairness argument that they bring up. If half of all females were trans, right? If half of all holes, or poles, I should say, if half of all males were trans, got it backwards. If half of all males were trans and they were trying to play in women's sport, I can see where, okay, that's going to be a little overwhelming. But we're talking about a population of trans people that's like 1% of the population, I think, is some of the revelations, like 1%, 1 out of 100. Okay, so 1 out of 100 males might be trans girls, okay. And then of that, what subset of them are wanting to be athletes? Well, what's the general percentage of kids in school that want to be athletes? I don't remember how many jocks were in your school compared to how many nerds and band kids and shop kids and whatever else. 1 out of 10? I don't know. I had a school of 350 seniors, maybe 1,000 in the school. Yeah, maybe 1 out of 10. So we're talking maybe a 1 out of 1,000 situation. And you think that's going to dramatically affect the fairness of all women's and girls' sports?
Oh, my girl, she's played basketball and she's played in junior high and high school all this time.
And then this big, tall trans girl came in her senior year and took her spot as center, and then she didn't get a scholarship. I imagine that might be one of the arguments, right? You got a trans, your daughter was trans. Maybe she runs track. Your daughter is cis. Maybe she runs track. She's been running track since she was a little kid. Then her senior year, this trans girl shows up. This trans girl shows up and beats her in the race. Now she finished second. That's not fair. Okay. Change that to Nigerian immigrant. My girl was playing basketball all through junior high and high school, and then her senior year, this big, tall Nigerian immigrant came and took her spot. Or this big, fast Nigerian immigrant ran faster than her during the 100 dash. That's not fair. Oh, no, it's fair, because she's got a hole, right? The Nigerian immigrant's a girl, so you're fine with it, even though she came out of nowhere. Your girl never had to race before against her. She transferred in that senior year and suddenly dominated your sport. It Is that fair? Are you going to start arguing against Nigerian immigrants playing sports? Or just the tall, fast ones? That's kind of what we're talking about here with the trans girl, right? It's going to be a rare 1 in 1,000 occurrence. And when it happens, it's about as rare as the big, strong Nigerian immigrant, or about as rare as Michael Phelps and all his weird physiological differences. Is the fairness so important to you in 1 out of 1,000 races or games or whatever it might be to exclude an entire class of people from an activity, whether they dominate or not? Because of the shockingly small number of trans athletes that are out there, there's an even shockingly smaller number that you ever hear about dominating some race or something. Now, at the pro levels, at the WNBA level, at the, you know, women's professional volleyball level, at the Olympics level, whatever, they've got the science and the doping and the blood testing and the labs and all that. And if they want to come up with, you can have X nanomoles of testosterone per deciliter of this, and you have to have transitioned so long or whatever, fine, come up with that, whatever. But let the sports come up with that through science and competitive fairness. What you're doing here at the junior high and high school level with the Supreme Court decision, where these schools aren't going to have the money for the genetic testing and all the other stuff, is basically giving the green light for someone to have to check this kid's junk. And it's not going to be just trans girls who suffer under this sort of regime. If you've ever been to a sporting event, you know, scholastic sporting event, and have ever met sports parents, the kind of sports parents that get in fist fights at little kid t-ball games because they're so jealous and competitive, you don't think one of them redneck dads, after swilling a couple of Bush Lights, watching the black girl with the short cropped hair and the strong musculature bump his little white daughter out of the paint to snatch a rebound, that you don't think he's going to say, "I'll bet she's trans"? That's what's going to happen. The girls, especially the black and brown girls, and especially if they don't present ultra feminine and wear, you know, lashes and makeup while they're playing and keep their hair long and such, the slightest bit of butchiness from any of these athletic girls is going to get an inspection request. Oh, we better see if you have a hole. Really important. We really need to know whether or not you have a penis or a vagina right now, as you get up to bat in the softball game or you're shooting a free throw. Whether you have a penis is really important right now. Yes. I hope we get past this. I hope that there is a backlash to this. I hope that democratic socialists start taking root throughout the country. I hope people start understanding that trans people have always existed throughout history. And they are who they say they are. But even if you don't think that, even if you think transgender is like some sort of disorder, that it's this gender dysphoria, right? Is it curable? It doesn't seem to be curable. So there's people that have this disorder that doesn't seem to be curable. And so long as we accept them as they are and let them live their lives, it doesn't seem to cause much harm to them or to society. The only harm ever seems to come from trying to force them to be what they don't feel they are. That's the harm. The conservatives have to go after trans because trans upsets their whole hierarchical belief system. That God is above man is above woman, straights are above gays, whites are above blacks, parents are above children. There's a hierarchy to the world, that a power structure that exists, and roles for everyone within that power structure. And a transgender woman gives lie to this hierarchical structure that a man has to be a macho provider, testosterone thing, and a woman has to be this submissive, soft breeding thing. Trans messes that up for them. But we're not going to get past it until we have a Democratic Party, until we have an opposition party that stands for the majority of the American people and all of the diversity within it, that recognizes that America contains multitudes and those multitudes vote. And if the Democrats would just finally give up their addiction to their PAC money and the donor class and the crypto bros and the AIs and the APACs and all of that, and get back to FDR socialism, get back to prairie populism, get back to the idea of the American government working for the American people, not the corporate people. If Democrats could get back to that, they could get back to winning landslide elections. They could get back to holding the White House more than two terms in a row. They could get back to where they had the House for 40 years. 40 years Democrats held the House of Representatives until the Reagan, until the Clinton years, until they turned away from prairie populism, from New Deal politics. They turned into the age of welfare as we know it is over, and 100,000 cops in the streets and NAFTA and the crime bill and all of that betrayal of the Democratic Party. I can still hope, and as this 4th of July has gone by and our 250th anniversary has passed, I am hopeful. I am trying to be a patriotic progressive in thinking that the last time a Republican screwed these things up so bad, we got a black president, we got legal weed, we got more health care, we got gay marriage, we got a raise in the minimum wage, the last minimum wage raise we've had back in 2009. But I fear if Democrats don't go all in this time, if they don't learn their lesson from sleeping on Trump and the MAGA movement, if they don't go forward with accountability as job one, number one, put these criminals behind bars for what they did and show the next crop of criminals the same is going to happen to them. Number two, eradicate all Trumpists and Trumpism from our government. And hey, the Supreme Court just got rid of Humphrey's executor, so you can actually do that when you get into office this next time. And then three, do good by the American people. Give us more health care, more subsidies, more job programs. Like the graphic on Fox News the other day, the free health care, the free college, where they're trying to scare everyone about the democratic socialists and what we propose. You know, things that people want. I have some hope that these next 250 years of America can be great, but only if we do something seriously in the next 25 to fight for the multiracial, diverse, woke, liberal, progressive democracy this country is meant to be. The end of this joint, my friends. The Radical Russ Show is planted, grown, harvested, trimmed, packaged, and rolled up by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. News, music, video clips, and social media posts are reproduced under fair use copyright laws for commentary and analysis. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by Russ Boom Boom Belville.
What's the boom boom for?
Boom boom boom.
Which brings us to our post-credits scene.
Why do we do this again?
Oh, God, not again.
Now, is that absolutely necessary?
So I saw Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce got married at Madison Square Garden, and the wedding was officiated by Adam Sandler, which tells you that Travis Kelce got to decide one thing in the wedding, for sure. But the other decision made by Travis Kelce and possibly Taylor Swift is drawing some ire from fans online, where they noticed that the owner of one of these concentration camps, the East Montana one, was a guest at the wedding. Now, the news has come out that he is an old childhood buddy, or his son is an old childhood buddy, something like that, of Travis Kelce's. So that's why he was there at the wedding. So, you know, in the ranking of evaluating people, old childhood buddy and concentration camp owner kind of outranks it, don't you think? I mean, I've known my friend Ricky since second grade, but if Ricky told me he was buying a concentration camp, I would no longer refer to him as my childhood friend. We wouldn't be friends anymore if he bought a freaking concentration camp. Someone online put this post, and I think it summed up brilliantly. It's like, is there just a thing where, like, once you get $1 billion, it doesn't matter how you got there, you're part of the club? I'm like, yeah, George Carlin said so. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. Oh, you're a billionaire? Well, then you must be good. You got your billion. You're part of our club. Welcome in. Bad move, Taylor. You can contact me by email at RadicalRuss@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as RadicalRuss.com. Nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. And until next week, take care of each other. You plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.